When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. It's Joe Galina. It's Scott Chu. We're back. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing better. My computer works. I mean, that's
the first thing that's important in creating a podcast and being able to talk to each other online, right?
Even just in just like in general, right? Like two things that can really disrupt your day in modern society. Your phone doesn't work or your computer doesn't work. Mm-hmm. One of those things not working, God. Everything's off.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to get political, but, you know, like sometimes you talk to people about like world events and whatnot, and I'm worried about, you know, Russia using nukes, and I'm like, I'm more afraid of them attacking, or our enemies attacking, our electrical grid. If our electrical grid goes down, no internet, you know, our phones won't work. That's really where you have to be afraid of. So I am glad. Go ahead.
If I lose GPS, I'm gonna leave the house and never come back. That's what's gonna happen. I'm never gonna find my way back here.
I'm old enough where I used to go to, if I didn't know how to get somewhere, I would go to MapQuest.com and print it out, and I'd either, you know, keep it on the passenger seat, or I'd have my wife with me reading it or whatnot. Are you that old where you remember that?
Yeah. Or no,
you've always had GPS.
Yeah. Try using that on a bike, bud.
That's a good point. That is a good point. Well, look, we're recording this episode September 13th, 2022. It's about 7:46 Eastern time, and I've got the Yankees and the Red Sox in the background. It's the bottom of the second inning, scoreless. And Scott, it's really getting down to crunch time now, obviously, right? I mean, I was tweeting out that Wade Miley basically saved my fantasy baseball season this past Sunday. I ended up picking him up, and I was down on strikeouts, and the five strikeouts he got me helped me to clinch my victory. And, you know, it's the playoffs time in the pitcher list staff league that I'm in, and those five strikeouts helped me win and helped me to move on to the next round. And look, you know, you're doing things that you normally wouldn't do. Who would think that, you know, at the start of the season that Wade Miley would be the guy that saved my season?
It's that time of year where Wade Miley can be a hero. Mm-hmm. Wade Miley is rarely a May hero, right? Like, he's not the guy that you're like, man, in May, this is going to change my fantasy season. But it's that time of year now. Mm-hmm. A lot of random contributors, because it's less about overall talent now in many cases and more about specific matchups and specific needs at specific times.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
What's interesting is as people leave for football, it's actually at the time when you have to do the most micromanaging.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of football, I'm going to just digress here. I'm going to ask you a question. Okay. So a buddy of mine, he happens to be he was my best man at my wedding. So he starts this fantasy football league, and you know, he invites his brothers, his cousins, his neighbors, you know, all people that I know, and doesn't invite me into the league. So his brother's son reaches out to me, texts me, and says, "Hey, look, you know, it's the first time I'm playing fantasy football." And I know this is a fantasy baseball podcast, but just in general, just go with me on this. So he asks me for help, whatnot. And then I finally realize that it's a league just with a lot of people I know that I wasn't invited into. And so, you know, the kid's father gets on the phone, whatever, when I'm helping them out too. And I mentioned, you know, I'm a little insulted that you guys didn't invite me in. He goes, "Well, my brother started the league, and Joe, we're afraid of you." So because I'm in a quote unquote, you know, an expert analyst, which, you know, it is what it is, they were afraid to invite me in the league. I mean, I am super insulted. I mean, talk me through this, Scott. Have you been in a situation like this?
No one has ever been afraid of me in any fantasy league ever. So no, that's never happened to me.
I mean, look, we know a lot about player pools and fantasy baseball. And if you're in fantasy football, you know as well. But you know as well as I do, you could draft a team that you think looks great at the beginning of a season. You get a couple of key injuries and you make a couple of miscalculations. And all of a sudden, you have a crappy team. There's no guarantee, Scott, that you and I are going to win every single league that we play in. It's just impossible.
I mean, there's no guarantee I'm going to make the playoffs in every league.
Right. Exactly.
Every league has different luck, different. I mean, it's just, you never know how these things are going to play out. And I don't even mean just that I can bring that to like a lesson about a player performance right now, right? Mm-hmm. We've been watching Bo Bichette be a lesser player all year long. His stolen base rates are still terrible, right? Mm-hmm. He's 9 of 17. Last I looked, not including the games that are today on Tuesday, but as of right now, if you look at the rolling chart over 50 plate appearances, he is now doing better than he ever has ever.
Mm-hmm.
His rolling WOBA is up above 500 right now. He's right. Never been this good after a different point this season where he had never been as bad.
Right.
Right. And then had the longest slump of his career and decided he'll be better than before. Right. That's why none of us know, like 0% of people were saying he will be better than ever at some point this season.
Right.
No one's been saying that since, really when he bottomed out in like late June. Mm-hmm. I traded him in a dynasty league for for a really nice piece it's a rental, but it's Jake DeGrom and I'm now in second playing for first, but, you can't predict these things.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, I mean, of course it leaves us with questions like, where do we rank Bo Bichette next year?
Right.
Right. It'd be really nice if he can hold this for the rest, at least hold something good for the rest of the month. He won't be this. No one sustains a 500 plus, expected WOBA over any meaningful period of time. Really
recency bias. We're all going to be high on him again next year, but you're right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We're all now the big thing you're going to have to wonder is, why would the Jays ever let him run? He's a terrible base stealer this year. 9 stolen bases on 17 attempts is awful. Teams usually don't like to run unless they have at least 75%. Usually they think they can make it. But the speed matters, but he's going to hit 30 homers.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to hit 280.
I was very high on Bo Bichette in preseason drafts. I rostered him in a few teams and he was my first round pick. You needed to move on him in the first round. Otherwise you weren't getting him. So I stuck with him all throughout the season, but preseason, I was thinking based on what he did last year, I loved it, and I was thinking, man, this guy has a chance to put up a Cedric Mullins type of year where he could approach 30 home runs and 30 stolen bases. But for a while, I looked like a very poor fantasy analyst. But then, like you said, man, when you look at what this guy has done over the past month, 371 batting average, and a 1.121 OPS, and hitting home runs again.
What really surprised me more than anything was that, according to some player raters right now, he's a top 20 fantasy hitter now because of how good this stretch has been.
Right.
And what's going to happen too is at some point, I mean, maybe not with Bo Bichette because it's so crazy what, the change he's made just in the last couple of weeks. But when you look at the year-long numbers next year, there's going to be people that forget about what this actually looked like.
Yes.
What Bo Bichette's season did not look like what you'd expect.
Correct.
Right? It was pretty average at best.
Mm-hmm.
Up until, again, 2 or 3 weeks ago, changed everything.
And you're being kind when you say average.
Yeah, and there are several players that are going to completely change their trajectory because of the month of September. It's not necessarily fair, but it's going to happen. Bad slumps in September impact draft stock the next year, right? Mm-hmm. Just like crazy. I mean, Bo Bichette, people people were going to have no idea what to do with him. He was going to, I worried there was going to be like a Christian Yelich problem where the upside is tremendous, but he's been really bad, or a Cody, you know, I didn't think he'd create or like Cody Bellinger, but there were some real concerns there about what he could be long-term for fantasy. Of course, now it's totally changed, right? Because he broke the slump. Now, hopefully he doesn't go back into a slump, and hopefully he doesn't take that long to recover from it. But you love seeing a guy be better than he's ever been before. And that's what Boba Chet is right now.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about guys having great Septembers and terrible Septembers. What about what's going on with Juan Soto? You know, since the trade where he was sent to the San Diego Padres, batting .218 with a .345 slug. I mean, so, you know, he got off to a horrific start of the season and then started to warm up right before the trade. But now when you look at his overall numbers, guy's batting .239, still walking and getting on base a ton, .402 OBP, .451 overall slug, but 24 home runs and 6 stolen bases. Is he going to, you think that he could possibly, because of what I even said too with recency bias, you know, could he be a little bit of a bargain come draft time next year? Could he like slip into the second round, you think?
I mean, I think maybe it slightly changes people's concepts of what his floor could be. I mean, this is it, right? What you're seeing. He's still going to get, I think, close to 30 home runs. Probably like 26. I mean, he's got 2 more weeks. There's no reason he can't hit 2 or 3 more home runs in the next, you know, and he's got 24 right now. He's got 6 stolen bases. He might steal 1 or 2 more. The counting stats are going to be pretty devastating, I think, for people. He's got like 52 RBI right now. You expected a lot more from Juan Soto. That's probably half the total you were hoping for when you drafted him.
But look, when you talk Juan Soto, you know, when people talk about his skill set, you know, you're talking Ted Williams, you're talking, you know, Mike Trout, you're talking one of the greatest players in baseball history. Just that's the way people describe him. So it's like automatic, you know, there's no argument to it. But look what we're seeing here, and baseball players like anyone else goes into a slump, but his is pretty prolonged now.
Yeah, it's pretty significant. I mean, it's hard to stay too worried, right? Because we are talking about a player that, despite having 2,579 plate appearances, he is 23 years old. So, and like, to be clear, this isn't the worst he's ever been, actually, in terms of expected WOBA, in terms like 50 game plate appearances. He's been about league average. And that's something I'm probably going to have to spend some time looking into. He does have pretty darn good expected stats. And of course, earlier
always had
season,
all season long. Yeah.
Yeah. So earlier this season, we talked about, you know, there was a gap in the expected stats because they hadn't, you know, they really hadn't adjusted for the offensive environment, but they've gotten much better as the year progressed. We knew that they would, right? And he continues to have really, really good. I mean, his expected WOBA on the season's in the 99th percentile. Right. Pretty good. So it's
expect really, a slug of 5.11.
Yeah. So I mean that it's not necessarily all bad luck, but I think to some extent we can say, yes, he is having some bad luck, likely in the batting average department. I mean, it was still going to be down, but it probably should be 20 or 30 points higher than that. So it's Juan Soto's this guy who I think he's still going to be a first round pick. Because if this is the floor, I mean, you're still talking what, more than 25 home runs, you know, plenty of runs scored. He's going to get plenty of those. You know, the RBI were down, but .402 still, OBP, that's a down year for the man.
Yeah, I mean, still striking out less than 14% of the time.
Too, and walking 20% of the time.
Yeah.
Right? His OBP and his slug lately have been basically the same because everything he's doing is walking. But again, I think that he's young. He's going through a slump. He's had them before. He's had them for much longer than this. Well, not, yeah, I mean, a little bit. If you look at the end of 2019, we saw a bit of a slump there in comparison to what he'd been doing. It's hard to even call them slumps because he's still above league average most of the time. So Juan Soto, I think that there's a struggle there. I think things have been really weird in San Diego. I mean, it's one thing to go to a new team. I mean, there's been a lot of turmoil there, but they're still, you know, they're still fighting for their playoff lives, I guess. And
think about what's happened since he got there. Hader loses his closer's job. He was one of the best closers in baseball, loses his closer's gig. He's starting to come around a little bit more, you know, recently. But then you get the news about Tatis Jr. You know, you're thinking that he's going to come and, you know, add some depth to that lineup. You're looking forward to playing with him, right? It's accurate what you just said. It's kind of been a really weird year with the Padres.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't even the worst slump for a player traded to the Padres, right? Josh Bell was horrendous.
Yeah.
For the first month or so while he was there. Mm-hmm. He's gotten better lately, but I'm willing to chalk it up to that because of just the extreme skills. There's reason to suspect something's off because of the huge gap between his expected and real stats. The gap doesn't necessarily tell you that the problem is just luck. It just indicates that there is a decent chance luck is dragging this down and making it worse and exacerbating any real problems he has. Mm-hmm. Right. I guess the one thing I would resist and tell others to resist is to find a single thing he's doing differently and call it the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we all get trapped in. And then we get this confirmation bias because we can do something like that once. And then we expect we're going to be able to do an analysis like that every time. But simply put, baseball players' problems are really complex, right? Like Josh Hader, you can talk about all the stuff going on with his arm, but then you also have to talk about the fact that he and his wife had a complicated pregnancy for the birth of their child earlier this year. And around that time is when you see the stuff start going because, you know, as many people have said, they're humans, right? Mm-hmm. And Josh Hader's dealing with real life stuff in addition to baseball stuff, right? There are probably things wrong with his mechanics that are throwing it off. And the fact that he's had a rough year probably didn't make that any easier. So it can really impact a player's ability to make adjustments. I mean, it'll lower his draft price by maybe half a round for Juan mm-hmm. Soto. That's it.
Yeah. Curious, what have you been doing with him on the hitter list and also Bichette? I mean, have they been going in opposite directions or, you know, have you been kind of staying the course with Soto?
I'm actually messing with that right now. Could not do a hitter list last week because my hard drive failed mm-hmm. and I can't do this without a computer and a hard drive. But
it helps.
Bichette's going to take a pretty good jump because I respect when I see a player doing things better than they've ever done before. Mm-hmm. So that's a big deal. And then Soto, the thing is, there's only so far I can drop it. Because again, if this is the floor, and I suspect that it is, right? That's a first round player's floor. That's why you draft him in the first round, because the mm-hmm. floor is still a very good player, right? Like, especially when they play. Now, as of right now, a lot of player raters would have him somewhere around like the 50th best hitter overall right now on this season. And that's rough, right? I get that. And it's mostly, I mean, that's for regular batting average leagues because of that 239 batting average. It's probably much better in OBP leagues. Mm-hmm. It's probably something more like 30 or 40 or something like that. But again, it's something where they're going to move, but particularly Soto, they're just not very far. I'm willing to move him down. There's, you know, it's one of those, yeah, he's slumping, but who cares? Right. Yeah. I just looked, Razzball has him as the 25th best overall on OBP league batter. So that's what his floor looks like. Mm-hmm. Two spots below Bo Bichette for whatever it's worth.
Right. Right. Let's talk about etiquette at this stage of the game. So hopefully you out there listening, you're vying for a playoff spot or maybe have even just basically clinched one already or are on your way to winning your Roto League or whatnot. But Scott, talk about a little bit about etiquette in terms of working the waiver wire in leagues where you're out of it. So like for instance, I play in a very competitive league. It's a Roto League 15 teamer. I am in fifth place. The first four spots are kind of bunched up. I'm 10 points behind the fourth place, league member. And it's very, very unlikely that I'm going to have a shot. I'm still trying, but very unlikely that I'm going to have a shot. First top three, in the league get paid. I'm continuing to make waiver wire moves. In general, like, what's the etiquette when it comes to teams and, you know, if you're fading in the league, should you continue to actively pursue players on the waiver wire?
So I've played on, I'll use an example. I play on soccer. I've played on soccer teams before I ripped my knee. Hopefully I'll be back next year. I've played on soccer teams that are really bad. We don't have a lot of talent. We're just trying to play. Late in the game, we're never going to win, but we continue to try, right? And the reason we do is because we like playing soccer. I like playing fantasy baseball. And if my team is in last place, I probably won't do some, you know, in a redraft league, I won't do trades or something like that if I have no real chance. But I'm trying to do two things. I'm trying to not get in last, and I'm trying to have fun. And if that means adding a player on the waiver wire, then I'm going to add a player from the waiver wire.
Right.
Right. Just because you're not doing, I mean, if your league wants to lock that all down and own, you know, make it a last man standing sort of thing at the end, fine. But I play fantasy baseball first and foremost to have fun and because I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And you can't stop me from enjoying it just because I'm having a bad season.
Right.
And part of enjoying it is trying, I mean, especially in a head to head league, I'm trying to win every matchup I have every week.
Of course.
Even, even if my team stinks. And in a roto league, I'm trying not to be last.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I'm going to try to do. And I'm going to always try to do that. Right.
Right.
And you know, it's fun to pick up players and see them do good. You know, I've been, you know, I was touting Jake McCarthy, despite the fact that Corbin Carroll got called up, and guess what? Jake McCarthy has been the best outfielder in the Arizona. I did not expect Jake McCarthy to be the rookie Diamondbacks outfielder that we'd be talking about in September, but he is right. Because he can fly. The Diamondbacks are letting him run. And he's hitting for some power. It's amazing, right? It's fun, right? So my view of the etiquette is no collusion, obviously. Don't just be cutting all your guys because you're frustrated and done. But if you're just genuinely trying to play fantasy baseball, play fantasy baseball. That's why you paid for that team. If it's a pay league, it's why you drafted a team. It's why you did all that. So have fun and play.
Mm-hmm. All right, good advice. And I agree with you. And so before I want to talk about some of the new rules for the 2023 season that were announced. I think it was this past Friday, and talk about them and maybe try to figure out a little bit if there's going to be any fantasy implications. By the way, this is the second home run that Gerrit Cole, and this has been a real big issue for him. You know, he is an ace. He's the Yankee ace. And I've even kind of, you know, even on this podcast, I even said, look, you know, I love him and everything. He's a Yankee. He's a great pitcher. But he's not like a Verlander. He's not a DeGrom, in my opinion. Gives up too many home runs, lets things get in his head. Like, you know, opening day, the start of the Yankee game was delayed by like 10 minutes because of something Billy Crystal was doing on the field. I don't know. There was a delay in his first pitch or whatnot, and it got in his head, and then he got off to a horrible start. But Yankees losing now 3-2, and Cole's given up two home runs. Yeah. Okay, so since we last met and did a podcast together, we got Josh Jung, Josh Jung, third baseman for the Rangers, Tristan Casas, first baseman for the Red Sox. Any interest in guys like that in terms of there's only a couple weeks left, but, you know, who do you think gives you the best chance of the recent call-ups? We've even, you know, Gunnar Henderson is still playing well. You know, any thoughts on some of these players, like for the last couple weeks, if there's a chance that, you know, they're still on a waiver wire?
Yeah, so, I mean, Josh Jung he's striking out a lot as he's come up. It's only been a couple of games where he's striking out over half the time. That said, he showed excellent plate skills in the minor leagues, and he is hitting for some power. That's about all he's hitting for, actually. He has 5 hits, 2 doubles, 2 home runs, and a single. So he's definitely got that. I rank Gunnar Henderson the highest right now of all of them. And a big part of that is, I mean, it was opportunity. Right. He had a clearer path to playing time than a guy like Corbin Carroll, who's probably the best prospect that's been called up this season. even though the outfield, the Diamondbacks outfield is strangely crowded with young left-handed outfielders that they need to get a look at. It's really bizarre. I mean, it includes McCarthy, and then Josh Rojas plays infield and outfield. Dalton Varsho has mostly been in the outfield. He's left-handed as well. And Corbin Carroll, they all need to play. So that's been rough. But Gunnar Henderson has a pretty wide open path to playing time, because a lot of guys in his way are guys that the Baltimore Orioles just don't care about long term. Ramon Urias is not a long term asset for them. Rougned Odor, you know, a show favorite, Rougned Odor, is on that team, and it's not someone they're worried about the future. So Gunnar's going to play. I think he's got a great skill set. The thing is, for these young guys, you don't have time for them to work it out. And so I'm really focusing matchup to matchup. Right. So right now, Josh Young was in Miami. Right. And they generally have good pitching. But if he's not up against, you know, Alcantara, I'm willing to take that shot. But again, this time of the season, I'm balancing talent and schedule a lot differently than I did sometime.
Oh, yeah.
A great tool that's out there. I mean, if you pay for any of ESPN's content, I think Tristan Cockcroft's Fantasy Forecaster is one of the best tools out there in terms of just looking at the schedule and seeing what you get. But if you don't pay, you can go to FanGraphs. You can go to Roster Resource. And we all use it to look at depth charts and things like that. And if you don't, you should. But one of their in-season tools is really useful. It's the 2002. There's the probables grid and the schedules grid. The probables grid takes you out about a week and a half, 2 weeks, and just shows you who is projected to start for each game coming up. Right. And obviously it's subject to change because teams don't make it official that far ahead, but they do keep track of that. And then they also include any news that they find right from their news wire. They go, oh, this guy, it sounds like they're going to call this guy up for Thursday. Let's drop him in. The other thing they have is the 2022 schedule grid, and it takes you out about 2 weeks, right? Actually, it might even be slightly longer than that. It might be three, because right now it actually shows all the way out to Saturday, October 1st. Right. So it'll actually show you who teams are playing, who have the most games, and also who they're playing against. Like, for example, this week, it's a little late to act on it, but you still could. Tampa Bay and Toronto had 8 games each for this week. They played every single day, and they had a doubleheader. Mm. They had it today, which when you're listening to this, will have been yesterday. So that's a huge deal, because many teams had 2 days off this week, especially if you're in a weekly lineups kind of thing. Do you want the guy who plays 8 games or 6 games, right? 8 games or 5 games, right? That's a huge difference maker. I'm definitely looking at that.
8 is the answer, right?
Yeah. Okay. Every time, just about, right? Unless there's a huge talent gap. But like, for example, I'm looking at the Colorado Rockies. They've got one homestand left, and it's against San Francisco and San Diego, right? So I'm really looking at that. Next week, I'm going to be loading up on Rockies, Giants, and Padres, because they all go. The Padres have the other matchup that week isn't always great. But for example, San Francisco is at Colorado and then at Arizona. Those are not great pitching teams, mm-hmm. right? Outside of what, like Zach Gallen? So absolutely.
Who's incredible.
That's what, one starter to watch for against the Giants next week, and they play play 7 days. That's mm-hmm. huge, right? Dodgers next week, they've got 8 games. They play every single game, every single day, and then they have 2 against Arizona, right? So that's a big deal. That's something I'm watching for, right? Who plays the most, and who plays the most in very favorable situations? It's honestly sometimes as easy as going through the schedule, looking at the teams I want to target and seeing who they play against, right? I go right down to the Colorado line and I'm like, all right, who's headed to Coors soon, right? It'll be their last homestand. It'll be a 7-game homestand. I want to know because they're going to, you know, that's probably going to be pretty darn good. Or I look at the Nats and say, okay, who plays the Nats? They don't pitch well and they don't hit super well, mm-hmm. right? Or I'll go to the probables grid and see every game that Noah Syndergaard starts, because I know that someone's going to steal a bunch of bases that day, because Syndergaard just doesn't hold runners, right? You can use those things to your advantage, because now you're micromanaging your roster and knowing the schedule. I mean, that's also how you're going to use that probables grid to pick out the streamers before the day of, mm-hmm. right? Like, everyone looks for tomorrow's starters or today's starters, but now you can look out for, okay, today is Wednesday, but actually I need a guy for Sunday, right? Yeah, you can do that. A lot of the, you know, a lot of the sites that people use will allow you to also pull up like a schedules grid and see what projected starters for what day. And also on the hitting side, you can see what their upcoming schedule is and in many cases who they're playing against, right? Mm-hmm. If you've got a lefty and you notice that they're going to get they're going to face three lefties that week, that stinks. If you see that they're going to play all righties in a given week, which is very plausible, that's awesome. That's going to help you make that tough lineup decision because you probably have more players you want to start in many cases than you have places to put them. Right. So how do you make the call right now? Schedule.
And if you have a TBD as the projected starter and he's pitching against the Pirates or the A's, go with the TBD. But anyway,
every time.
Yes.
TBD is the worst pitcher in the league.
Or could be the best pitcher in the league. You never know.
I mean, you know, as a general note, like whoever that guy is, plays for everybody, he's no good.
Right.
Snap against him every time, you're going to do decent.
Right. Okay. So why don't we take a quick break here? Then I want to go over some of the new rules that were released this past Friday. And 2023 season going to be slightly different, want to get your opinion on it, see if there's any fantasy implications involved in some of these rule changes as well. We'll be right back right after this.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we're back. Hacks and Jacks, the Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Joe Galina, Scott Chu. Follow me at Joe Galina. Follow Scott at If The Chu Fits. And as I teased right before our little break, baseball announced that there are going to be some rule changes for the 2023 season, Scott. And let's just go through a few of them before we say goodbye to everyone. The bases that are going to be used are going to increase in size from 15 inches to 18 inches. And I was reading this really good article on Fangraphs by Michael Bauman. He's really good at math, I guess, because he figured out that it's a 45% increase in surface area. But the thought here, Scott, is that we're going to see, with a bigger base, we're going to see a decrease in injuries, like injuries like spikings, twisted ankles. You know, the bigger base is going to lead to less awkward twists and turns because, the base is bigger and you're not going to have to worry too much about colliding with the defender if you're the runner. In AAA, the first season of them using larger bases didn't make much of a change on its own, but in the lower levels, bigger bases combined with rules about pickoffs that we're going to talk about later, saw large increases in steals per nine innings. So what do you think about this idea to use larger bases?
So I lean towards what happened in AAA. I just don't think it's going to change that much. So steals are a very situational thing in the major leagues. What you will find in the lower minors is that catchers and pitchers don't care about the run game. They're both, it's a combination of not being very good at stopping it and not caring because you're trying to like work on your stuff and get to the next level. right? You'll see gaudy steals totals from tons of guys in the low minors that don't translate one bit to the major leagues because lots of major league catchers can throw guys out, right? Whereas lots of minor league catchers can't. They're still learning the craft. So I don't think, I mean, there is, you know, that stat, that 45% larger area. I mean, one, that is good. I think that will help some of those awkward injuries. And you kind of use the, you know, it's sort of like that pizza pie math, mm-hmm. right? Like the difference between a 10 and a 12 inch pizza doesn't sound like much, but it's actually enormous,
right?
You've increased, you know, it's actually a lot more pizza.
A lot more calories, baby.
Yeah. I just don't think it's gonna, that particular rule change, I think may be the least impactful of the ones we see.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that it said that the larger base, but also when you combine it with the pickoff change in rule. So now what they're going to do now is, let's see, pitcher's going to be allowed two pickoff moves without penalty. But after a third step off, the pitcher's going to be charged with a balk unless at least one offensive player advances a base. So this is going to be real interesting. So I'm reading this thing from ESPN. A lack of action on the base paths has been a concern of MLB's in recent attempts to improve the aesthetics of this sport, with stolen bases per team down to 0.51 per game in 2022. That's down from 0.66 a decade ago. And in the 80s and 90s, when you had Vince Coleman on the Cardinals regularly stealing 80, 90 bases, you had Ricky Henderson stealing 130 bases. The range of bases, the average number of bases per game stolen was 0.75. So they're thinking that this pickoff rule not only is it going to help to change the pace of play where there will be less interruptions, but they're saying that it actually helps, again, in getting more stolen bases in the game.
Yeah, I mean, stolen bases are really exciting. However, there's a reason, one of the main reasons they're less common is because Sabermetrics just doesn't like them very much. It's hard to steal bases. Mm. And again, you don't want to do it unless you're looking at like a 75 to 80% chance because of the, you know, the way it impacts your likelihood of scoring a run in general, right? Because the object of the game is to score runs, and getting caught stealing crushes your ability. I mean, you might as well have not gotten the hit.
Man, right? We were talking about Bo Bichette before, and you were saying that he wasn't a good stealer of bases, where yes, he's tried 17 times to steal a base, gotten caught 8. Yeah, so in a lineup exactly. like that, where they just got a bunch of power hitters, that kills your rallies right there.
I mean, that's runs off the board.
Yeah.
Getting caught 8 times took runs away from his team. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's just the way it works. So, I think that there will be players this impacts more than others. It's going to be the real speed demon guys, right? The Jake McCarthy's, the Jose series, where you're trying to do everything you can to keep them from running. That's when those pick, I mean, what's more common, right? You get picked off or you get thrown out at second.
You probably get thrown out at second.
Yeah,
no?
Because that's what you see, right? You see players get thrown out at second.
Got the answer right? Okay.
Yeah. So what's going to happen is, yes, you're going to limit the pickoff moves. But one, I think pitchers will just hold it and you'll get fewer of those like almost lazy pickoff moves to just walk them back.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be more intentional, but I think it's just going to emphasize, and may it, to some extent, get teams more focused on defensive catchers who can throw guys out at second because you can't just rely on pickoff moves. But again, mm-hmm. There are some pitchers who just don't do it, right? For the longest time, John Lester had the yips.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Teams stole on him all the time. But that's also because he had a slow delivery and those kinds of things. But mm-hmm. I don't think, at most, it does increase the number of stolen bases. But that actually just generally devalues stolen bases in Roto, which is something we all actually probably should want. Mm-hmm. A single stolen base is far too valuable in Roto right now due to the scarcity of them. And just the like what it really dictates the kind of draft capital you have to spend to get stolen bases. I'd love to see stolen bases go way up so that we can treat it more like the other stats. because I'm sick of having to really focus just on steals because they're not at that important to the game of baseball, to be quite honest, especially compared to home runs and doubles and things like that. You know, you'd rather your player hit a double than do a single and a steal, right? Because the double has more chances to drive in additional runners.
Right, right. So, but I'm just going to say, you know, the stolen base, and you alluded to it just 2 seconds ago, it's an exciting play because, you know, I got to watch Ricky Henderson in his prime when he was with the Yankees in the mid to late 80s. You know, if he walked or got a single, you know, you knew that he was going to be on third. It was a triple because he'd be on first, and inadvertently he would just steal second, and right after that, he'd steal third. The guy was a great – not only was he like the fastest guy in baseball, but he was able to read the pitcher and was a great base stealer as well.
I mean, the way he changed the game was he'd get on first, whatever way. And then either someone would hit a single, and that's first to third for Ricky, right? No
yeah.
one stopped.
Oh, yeah. It should be first to third for a lot of guys, but yes, no yeah, doubt for Ricky. Mm-hmm.
Or if not, he steals second and mm-hmm. he runs for home.
Right.
Right. I mean, he just adds base. Like, he was the kind of base stealer that really, because his chance of success was so high that it just made sense to send him every time. It's one of the reasons they keep sending Jake McCarthy mm-hmm. in Arizona. Because his success rate is just really high. He's really fast. I mean, you're also seeing this with Jose Siri. He's one of the fastest guys in the league down in Tampa.
Yeah.
And they let him run because, you know, one, they don't have a great offense to begin with. And they're more of a slap hitting offense than a home run offense. Mm-hmm. So get guys in better position to score runs. So, yeah. I mean, I think this will, I think, certainly have more, those pickoff rules will have a lot more impact than the base size thing.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think, it all pales in comparison to the fantasy analysis we have to do for the killing of the shift.
Yes, yes. We'll do that last because with the pickoffs, you know, and I did mention, you know, the stolen bases and whatnot, but I think that the biggest thing that the pickoffs are going to do is just help with the pace of play. Right. And what else is going to help this pace of play? But the pitch clock, Scott. So with this new rule, pitchers are going to have 15 seconds to throw a pitch with the bases empty and 20 seconds with a runner on base. Hitters are going to need to be in the batter's box with 8 seconds on the pitch clock. So if a pitcher has not started the motion to deliver a pitch before the expiration of the clock, he will be charged with a ball. So if a batter delays entering into the box, he's going to be charged with a strike. So, you know, I mean, this is going to be real interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how they enforce this, Scott.
I mean, I could make up theoretical reasons why this could be a big impact for fantasy for specific players, particularly those who maybe shake off their catcher a bit or, you know, batteries that maybe don't have that kind of chemistry because they can't agree on where to put the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I think this is really just going to be a quality of life improvement. It is worth noting that if I'm not mistaken, the players that have representation on the rules committee or whatever did not vote for these.
Right.
They didn't want them. But at the same time, I think there's good reason to suggest that it'd be nice to see more, you know, a little more urgency on the mound getting these pitches out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We just don't need a lot of 3-hour ball games.
Yeah.
We just don't. But again, I'm not super concerned about it. I do like the fact that the batters have to get in the box. Some take far too long. They can still call time and things like that. But, you know, just keep the game moving.
Yeah. And they experimented with this in the minor leagues, and minor league games that use the pitch clock were an average 26 minutes shorter, Scott. So I think it's really good. I mean, Scott, when I was a kid, and I'm a lot older than you, but when I was a kid, baseball games here in New York used to start at 8 o'clock, and they'd be over by, you know, 10:15, 10:30, and you'd go straight from the ball game into the 10 o'clock news. So it's like, you know, now, you know, I love the game and whatnot, but, you know, these 3- and 4-hour marathons, no matter how much I love the game, they're a little tough to take.
It's one thing if there's like you know, extra innings and scoring and things like that. But some of these games are just taking a long time because players are taking a long time. Yeah. And I'm sure there's competitive or strategic reasons to do so, but I don't care. It's boring.
So, you know, I mentioned that article from Fangraphs that Michael Bauman wrote, and he mentioned another interesting effect of having a pitch clock would be that pitchers would have to conserve their energy and not like go all out when they're throwing their pitches if they know that they're forced to reduce the time in between that they throw pitches. So that he's thinking that maybe velocity would kind of go down, and then the trickle-down effect, maybe there'd be less strikeouts, maybe there'd be more balls in play. You know, what do you think?
Alternatively, we may see pitchers throw shorter outings.
Right? Which they're already doing, right?
Right. That, I mean, sort of trends with the strat, like it sort of matches with the trends we're already seeing. I expect that it may just continue to feed that trend a bit and just more 5 and 6 inning starts than 6 and 7 inning starts. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it won't be crazy, but again, I think leagues that use the quality start do have to think about this because they're going to start running into a scarcity problem, you know, in theory. Right. But again, people still play with stolen bases, and that stat has a horrible scarcity problem, right? The stolen bases are all bunched up in the same players. So it's something interesting. It may impact, it may make innings more valuable because starters don't get as many. And the guys that are going to take those innings are middle relievers, and we don't use them in fantasy. So it sort of reduces the number of innings that are available in a fantasy league reasonably. It makes it harder to get to that 1,000. Right. Because you need more starts to do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's a long term effect, and it may be fairly minor. I think from player to player, we don't see much of a change except for maybe the really hard throwers. But again, if their team is doing, you know, if their team isn't scoring, it could become, I mean, these shorter games could become really tough if they're not efficient. Mm-hmm. But I do think, you know, it may put more stress on efficiency as well.
Right. And one of the other things, and then we're going to get to the shift, but Michael Bauman noted that in 2021, the average time in between pitches was 23.7 seconds. He also noted that some of the biggest culprits regarding this are relievers. And we just talked about pitchers going, you know, fewer innings and whatnot, but relievers averaged 24.7 seconds between pitches, and St. Louis's Giovanni Gallegos was the biggest culprit, averaging 31 seconds between pitches. Really takes his time.
Oh, it's miserable too. I hate when he'd get on the mound in the games I was watching because it just slowed to a crawl.
Yes, yes. All right, so let's move to the shift. Let's shift over to the shift. So at a time, Scott, when a pitch is thrown, there will need to be 4 infielders on the dirt, and 2 of them are going to have to be on each side of second base. Players will be able to move as soon as the ball leaves the pitcher's hand. If the hitting team reaches base and runners advance on a ball hit under the violation, the game proceeds without penalties. If the play has any other consequence, an out, a sacrifice, etc., the hitting team can decide either to accept the penalty, which would add 1 ball to the hitter's count, or decline it and the play would stand.
Fascinating rules, first of all. Second of all, I really think the important thing here is, number one, don't just automatically assume that guys that struggled against the shift are going to get these huge boosts in batting average. Now they will. We're going to see boosts in batting average. It's going to be for very specific players.
Joey Gallo has a chance at winning a batting title next year.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's a very reasonable take. That's what I like about it.
Thank you.
He's obviously the poster boy for a player that could really use help with the shift, but let's be clear. What you're also going to see is the second baseman is not going to play, nor like they're going to still move those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think you will definitely see an increase in batting average when there's a player on first. Right. Especially against left-handed guys, because the first baseman is going to have to stay at first base. They're going to play right on the line. Second baseman may have to move a little to adjust. You're going to see the shortstop come all the way over to the second base, like to second base, and probably leave the third baseman where they are, they're going to be some modified pseudo shifts, right? I think that's definitely something. You may see an outfielder move up a little bit, but not much. It's not going to, but it shouldn't change their power numbers that much, right? Their slug may go up because they get more singles, but the home run is a home run regardless of where the infielders are,
right?
They have no impact on that hit. So it won't necessarily help guys who just aren't hitting the, like, aren't hitting home runs. So on one hand, like, yes, a guy who perennially is crushed by the shift is Carlos Santana. Had a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a renaissance to his career this year. He's shown some relevance, especially as he's been with the Mariners, but we should see his batting average go up a bit. And in turn, a slight increase in his OBP, you know, increase in his slug due to the, you know, increase in singles. But what you won't see is just a bunch of, like, the home runs and doubles were home runs and doubles anyway. Right? Because even when, you know, the shift is designed to take away a single, a specific single, a single between the first and second baseman, right? That's it. That's all the shift does. It takes away that single. So players, you will see boosts in batting average, but it doesn't change as much other stuff. Right. It's just going to raise, really, league-wide batting average probably goes up a bit, particularly for left-handed batters.
Right.
That's it.
Well, let me tell you, in the minor leagues, they experimented with this in the lower levels of the minors, and batting average on balls in play for the first 2 months of the season by left-handed hitters rose by 8 points. So that's pretty significant.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about an overall group with a bunch of guys who will never make the majors, right? I mean, that's pretty significant, right? And with minor league defenders.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, who are not, I mean, minor league defense is not the product you see in the major leagues, right? There's a reason they're in the minors. So again, we'll see this bump in batting average, again, for some players more than others, right? Fly ball hitters just don't see this as much, right? And actually, that's one of the things for Carlos Santana. He does hit a lot of fly balls, right? When you hit a bunch of infield flies, it doesn't matter where the infielders are. They're going to get under it, right? It's not a difference maker. So it's going to be those sharp ground balls that really, you know, that really push it. It's going to make their batting averages more variable, right? Again, other names. So we've seen Anthony Rizzo really struggle against the shift the last few seasons. I think he could see his batting average go up a bit, right? The big one's going to be Christian Walker. Every ground ball he hits is basically an out because it's right at the shift. And he already is showing plenty of power. So he, you know, that's a pretty big deal, but you're not going to be able to just go down the list of guys best against the shift and move them all up your draft board because you really need to know the rest of the sort of batted ball outcomes that they do, right? The shift again impacts ground balls and low line drives. That's it. Yep. So, you know, how, and they have to be hit hard, right? Because if they're not hit hard, the second baseman is going to get to them anyway.
Right.
So you need hard hit ground balls to the pull field. So you need to look at, you can look at things like who was best and worst against the shift, but then also you need to look at what kind of balls does the player hit, right? And those guys. So I think if you combine a leaderboard of like who struggled against the shift and also who has high exit velocities on ground balls and who is pulling the ball a lot. I think when you combine those three things and you see names on the tops of all of those lists, those are the guys that really stand to gain because the other thing about eliminating the shift is it doesn't affect all players the same, right? No rule change ever does, but this will be an extreme case and that right-handed hitters, it affects them basically nothing at all.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I personally don't like this rule. I don't know. How do you feel about it? I mean, I feel that the hitters should have been more proactive in, you know, learning how to, you know, hit to the opposite field.
You know,
bunting more. You know, force the issue where, hey, you know, make it so that it's not effective against you. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, guys that strike out too much. Yeah, there's been too many strikeouts. Why don't we, instead of make it three strikes and you're out, make it four strikes and you're out. I mean, that's just the way.
I mean, if you've got, so you're up against Christian Walker, right? You know that he's going to do one of two things. He's going to hit a ground ball to the pull field, or he's going to hit a home run to the pull field, right? That's it. So if you've got him trying to do a push bunt, you've already won, right? Mm. Because he's not going past first base. First of all, he's probably not getting to first base.
Well, if your third baseman is playing in the outfield or all right, the way right. shift, yeah, he will yeah. be on first yeah. base. Yeah.
You're stopping at first base, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's sort of the point of the shift, right? It is mm-hmm. to get rid of those singles, and they know that the only way to counter it is to, at best, get to first.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So I think that's why you probably never saw the players react, because managers wouldn't have cared. It was not going to stop the shift. It was just going to limit your ability to produce, right? If you've got, you know, especially in his heyday, if you've got Joey Gallo having to bunt all the time, you've already taken the bat out of his hand.
But it wouldn't right? be all the time. It'd be enough where they're like, okay, you know, let's, you know, it's not doing what we intended on doing. The guy's getting on base. And then, yeah. you know, the player behind him will move him over or score a run. But I get what you're saying, you know.
Yeah. And I think
Gallo's built to hit 40 home runs a season.
Yeah, I mean, when you're that hitter too, you're like, I guess I could do a bunt, or I'm pretty good with this bat. What if I just hit it over him? Mm. Right? The shift doesn't matter if you hit over it.
Right.
And yeah. I think there's a lot of hitters that wanted to do that, and some just don't, right? And others maybe just didn't care that much, but, you know, because they're also a liability on the base paths, like Carlos Santana, right? He doesn't mm-hmm. run very well. He can't bunt. And even if he did, it takes him a long time to get to first, right? He needs the ball to go a long way. So I get kind of why players didn't react. And I think baseball wanted to ban the shift earlier, but there was this hope that the game would make the shift less effective. But it turns out teams just got better at shifting,
mm-hmm.
right? They got more creative with it. I think you will still see creativity in where you place infielders, right? And I'm not so attached to let guys do whatever they want, right? Like, you know, it's not fun watching a guy, you know, watching Joey Gallo in the batter's box right now. And not just because he's not hitting, right? Because it's home run or ground ball out picked up by, you know, whoever it is that's, you know, playing in the shift. So I do think there's going to be players that benefit a lot from this. As far as the rule itself, I'm indifferent. I like the strategy of shifting. I also recognize that the defense had gotten almost too good. Players just couldn't adjust to it. Mm-hmm. They couldn't beat it. And they probably also accepted that, you know, there's certainly guys that probably thought about bunting it and then maybe took some bunts in practice against live pitching and realized it was not a good idea. Right? Like maybe they're just bad bunters. Right? Right. We all say like, oh, well, in Little League. Yeah. But I've never had to bunt. Like, how the heck would any guy feel all that good about bunting against hey, look, it's Jake DeGrom throwing his 95 mile an hour slider. Let me just put my hand near the middle. Just break my
knuckles. Yeah. Right. Yeah. If you get hit by the pitch, and I hate to keep on bringing the Yankees, but that's who I know best, but when Jeter was getting started and whatnot, Phil Rizzuto was still showing up to spring training every year, and he'd hold bunting clinics. You know, and I'm not just saying even just exclusively bunting, but maybe, you know, just, and I'm sure that they do this, but, you know, players, you know, work on slapping the ball to the other side. You know, it doesn't have to be a bunt. But anyway, it's just an observation. But yeah, you're right. You don't want to get hit by a 100 mile per hour DeGrom fastball on your knuckles as you're trying to bunt.
Absolutely not. No. I think the only other thing I'd say about it is the main reason players pull the ball is because they're early, right? That's how you pull.
Mm-hmm.
You swing earlier. And if they wanted to push the ball, you just swing. I mean, you hit the ball deeper in the zone, right? That's inside out. Like, that's just how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Not super complicated, much harder to do than it is to understand, right? There's a reason, one of the reasons the shift works so well is that you use it against players that are almost always trying to crush fastballs, right? And they try to get ahead of those because their sweet spot is to pull that ball, hit a little early, because earlier also gives you that launch angle, right? Because you're later in the swing and you're rising up with that bat. So you can get that launch. And so, you know, that was a big issue. Those hitters are just designed to do that. They got to the majors by using that swing.
Yep.
So Yep, shift is just really effective against them, and they weren't going to change. So they made a rule.
Yep. They made a rule. The Rays, you know, started a new trend, and as they always do, it seems, right? We'll see what they come up with next. But all right, so that kind of slams a lid on things for today. Kind of a quick episode. Any previews to the hitter list that you'd like to share? Do you, any idea who the poster boy might be this week?
Yeah, so the poster boy is Gunnar Henderson. Ah. So he'll be ranked at 101. I've got him just outside the top 100 overall hitters. I think the big focus that I'm going to be having here is you're going to see some guys towards the back that are, it's all based on schedule and recent performance, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. would I ever rank, like, do I ever feel good about ranking maybe Eduardo Escobar? Absolutely not, but he's crushing the ball right now. Mm-hmm. And there's only so much I can ignore that. So I'll probably put him in that, you know, in my,
the taxi squad, or
in the taxi squad, somewhere like that, or other guys that I just noticed are hitting well, even if not everything's quite coming together, right? CJ Abrams has actually been hitting much better, of late.
A guy who
really struggled early. He was a former top prospect when he was a Padre, you know, really the key of that Josh Bell deal. He's hitting better of late. And the more he hits, the more he gets on base, the more he gets a chance to use those wheels, right?
Yes,
not doing
yes.
it yet, but that's the next step.
I moved him into my starting lineup on one of my teams. He was on my bench for a while. Yeah.
Because he's hitting well. And once he's hitting well and he can really start getting more established in that lineup, that's when you'll see the steals. Right? The last thing you want to do to a guy who's been struggling to make any kind of contact is get him on first and get him thrown out at second. Right. He actually did get caught stealing last week. But I do think that's going to come. It may not come this season. It's hard to know exactly when that's going to happen, but that's the other thing I'm really watching for. I'm watching for these young players to see what kind of adjustments they can make and what spot in the order their teams are willing to hit them.
All right. So we look forward to that. That's just about, like I said, slams the lid on things for this week. And we'll wish everyone luck out there as you go chasing your championships, right? Follow me at Joe Galena. Follow that guy, Scott Chu, at If The Chu Fits. Follow our podcast at Hacks and Jacks PL. Also, please subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcast content, and leave a review if you can. That helps us out a lot. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities, and we'll see you next time.